Okay, we're going to start this morning looking at Abraham. We looked at Job for a couple of classes, and now we're going to start looking at Abraham. And as we look at these lessons, we want to try and remember to look at it from the standpoint of how does it help me when I sin, and also how does it help me to when I look at others who have fallen and sinned and they have repented and are striving to live godly. Help me to look at them as God does. Because we look at these people, and Abraham today, to me, is a prime case of somebody whose faith was weak, and they sinned, but God still used them and thought of them very highly. So let's turn to Genesis chapter 12. And what three promises did God give to Abraham in these verses?
Land, nation, and seed.
And it's very plain that God made this promise. And he's telling him to leave his country and go, and he will do these things for him. That is in the first part of chapter 12. And so, starting in verse 4, those blessings are in 1 through 3 and also 7. The land promise is promised again to his descendants. And so he leaves, and Lot went with him, and here he is, he's 75 years old, and he has enough faith to leave where he has been, leave his family and all of everything he's known, and start on this journey. And so then by the time we get down to verse 11, let's read 11 through 13. Carol, would you read Genesis 12, 11 through 13, please?
It came about when he came near to Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, "See now, I know that you are a beautiful woman. And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, 'This is his wife,' and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say that you are my sister so that it may go well with me because of you and that I may live on account of you."
So here God has just, I don't know how long it's been, but it hasn't been too terribly long in his journey. And they get to Egypt, and he doesn't have enough faith that God will protect him. And so he asks Sarah. He not only sins himself, but he's asking her to lie too. And so that is him encouraging her to sin. What kind of spiritual leader in your family is that? For your husband to ask you to lie so he can live. And so you think, well, am I willing to lie or do I want my husband to die? And so neither one of them had enough faith to just say, we're not going to worry about this. God's going to take care of us. And then let's read 17 through 19. That was Melissa's coming in. Susan, would you read Genesis 12, 17 through 19?
But the Lord struck Abram and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Then Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister, so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go."
And so, Pharaoh is the one who's suffering. And this whole thing, and especially when we get to Abimelech, I do not understand. I do not understand God, and that's okay. But Abraham's the one who sins here. But he's not punished. Pharaoh's punished. Pharaoh didn't know she was his wife. He lied about it, and so he took her. But in this instance, even though he was a man of faith, he did not have enough faith in God to just state the fact, this is my wife, and we're traveling through. And so then, that was the first time. I asked you how many times, and of course it's two. So the first time was Pharaoh, and God intervened. And so you think, okay, God, you know, God's gracious and gave him an opportunity. But then we get to chapter 20, and we have the same story almost, except just different names. So let's read, Elizabeth, do you feel like reading?
I think so.
Okay. Will you read chapter 20, verse 1 through 3?
And Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country, and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur, and sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said to Sarah his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night, and said to him, behold, thou art but a dead man, for the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife.
So here, again, Abraham, you would think, I don't know how long this has been. I'm not good with the chronology. But it's been a little bit of time because, of course, Genesis may not be written in chronological order. But we have had in between here the case of Sodom and Gomorrah. So we know there, if it's in chronological order, there's been some time. And so did he not remember that God protected him and took her back and gave him back to her? And does he think God will, oh, well, you know, one shot and I'm done? Or what? We don't know. But it's, again, he's lied. Let's read verse 12 and 13. Amanda, would you read chapter 20, verse 12 and 13?
Besides, she actually is my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. She became my wife. And it came about, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said to her, this is the kindness that you will show to me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he is my brother.
So they planned this from a while back. And so you would think, wouldn't you change your plans if you saw something very important? He had had this experience with Pharaoh, and God spared him and saved him, and Pharaoh gave him stuff to get rid of him. And so now here's Abimelech. And poor Abimelech, he just doesn't understand.
But it's an opportunity for God to touch these men's lives too, to talk to them and tell them.
That is. It was interesting. I think it's Abimelech. In verse 6, God's talking to Abimelech, and God said to him in the dream, yes, I know that in the integrity of your heart you have done this, and I also kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. So God had a love and an interest in Abimelech, and he felt like God knew that Abimelech was a man of integrity and he would not have done this. And so that's why he spared him. But Abraham is the one that I cannot wrap my mind around, that he keeps doing this. And then what does God say Abimelech has to, Abraham has to do for Abimelech to be healed again? Oh, isn't it? Pray for him. Abraham is the one who sinned, but he has to pray for Abimelech. That has never computed in my mind. I'm not blaming God, but God is so much wiser than we are and has so much more knowledge than we have. But he knew this man, Abraham. He knew his heart. And I guess he knew he just needed to grow a little more. But how are we sometimes with people who are weak and continue to do the same thing? What kind of patience do we have with them? None. You know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you, is the way we feel about it. Well, this is Abraham's second time, but that wasn't God's attitude toward him.
You know, I get a little maybe insight, the difference between Abimelech and Abraham and Pharaoh, because in Psalm 33:18, it says that God's eye is on those those who fear him. You know, God had a relationship with Abraham. Abimelech and the Pharaoh had their gods. They didn't know who the Lord, L-O-R-D, was, as Abraham did. And to me, you know, Abraham did sin, but he's human. And, you know, we fear the Lord, and we try to serve him, but we fail miserably sometimes.
We do. But these two men who took her did not know. There was no...
They
did not know that she was his wife.
Right.
But sometimes, my point with this is, Abraham is a man who was a man who sinned. He was a man who failed.
Exactly.
And yet God still had a purpose for him. What is he called in verse 7? Melissa, Linda, read 20, verse 7.
Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours.
Yes. And so, he is a prophet, and God's still going to use him as a prophet. And so, we see men who have prominent positions in a congregation, and they make a mistake. Okay, the first one, they kind of give them a pass. And I'm not talking about infidelity or immorality, just things that they make mistakes. And if they make another mistake, people start to lose confidence in them. God did not lose confidence in Abraham after he lied twice about the same thing.
He had a plan for Abraham.
Yes, he did. He did. And God has a plan for us. And we need to be as patient with people as God is with me. Because I think God has a plan for all of us, and he's laid out that plan to serve him and told us what to do to serve him. It's not anything like the plan that he had for Abraham to bring about the Christ. The Christ was to come through his seed. But it teaches me that I need to be more patient with people when they make a mistake, even if it's the same mistake. We've had people here in past years, many years ago, in fact, there was one young man I think about who came forward several times for his weakness. And he was sincere every time. And he would do good for a little while, and then he would fall back into his bad habits, and he would come forward. And there was a few people who felt like, oh boy, here he goes again. And it's easy to get to feel that way, I guess, but what does that mean? That just means we need to help this person more. We need to be more involved with him, help them, rather than sit back on the pew and say, well, how long is it going to be before they come forward again? And so this teaches me that I need to not give up on people. God didn't give up on Abraham, and we should not give up either. Now, there comes a time when we shake the dust off of our feet, as Jesus told the disciples, and move on, because there are some people... There's a difference in a person who is trying and a person who has no will to try. And when they had no will to learn, Jesus said, shake the dust off your feet and move to someplace else. And there are people that, and that's a hard decision, because sometimes if it's somebody you really love and a member of your family, it's hard to say, I just have to give up and move on, because they are not going to do what God said.
And I find also, Pat, that between chapter 20 and chapter 22, maybe Abraham had to do a lot of growing. You know, we obey the gospel and we believe, but we're not fully grown yet. And Abraham, by the time he had God tells him to offer Isaac, then, you know, maybe he had to grow. You know, I see his faith, because he's called the father of faith.
Yes.
Because he believed God and it was counted to him as righteousness. Yes, he left Haran, but then he had these moments of disbelief. And so by the time he got to offering Isaac, he didn't hesitate.
Yeah, that's true. But that doesn't mean that he never had any more weak points. They may not be recorded.
Yeah.
Kind of like with David. When we get to David, we're going to see David. And, it's a mess. But anyway, we'll talk about him when we get there. Let's look at verse 18 and 19 of what is said about Abraham in chapter 18, verse 18 and 19. I don't remember who read last. Melissa, I think it's your turn.
Since Abraham will surely become a great and mighty nation, and in him all the nations of the earth will be blessed, for I have chosen him, so that he may command his children and his household after him, to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him.
Okay, this is God's fixing to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And it's interesting, starting in verse 17, the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do? And then in verse 20, the Lord said, so it sounds like the Lord is the one talking to him. The men rose up from there and looked downward to Sodom. So it's always been interesting to me, was the Lord actually one of the people who came to walk the earth and see what was going on in Sodom and know what he was going to do? But he wanted to tell Abraham about this because of who Abraham was and what he was going to do with Abraham. It's interesting, he said, for I have chosen him so that, and then it goes on, that he may command his children, and then it says, so that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him. So he wanted, this is a teaching moment for Abraham. Because Abraham does not understand why God's going to do this. Of course, why would he be concerned so much about what's going on in Sodom and Gomorrah? That's where Lot went. And so he's concerned about that. And why did he plead with him? And then I already answered. Or what did he do to try to persuade God about this? Let's read. Starting in verse. Nadine, you read starting verse 22 and read through verse 24.
And the men turned away from there and went toward Sodom, while Abraham was still standing before the Lord. Abraham came near and said, will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you indeed sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous and the wicked are treated alike. Far be it from you, shall not the judge of all the earth deal justly? So the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare the whole place on their account.
Okay, he starts out, and God said, he's going to wipe it away, and then he just can't believe there's got to be righteous people there. And so he asked God, and these are two nations or city states or whatever they are. I have no idea how many people were there, but he asked if just 50, if you can just find 50. And God said, okay. And so he continues on down, then he goes to 45 and 40 and 30 and 20, and finally gets down to 10. If you find just 10, and the Lord said, I will not destroy it if I find 10. If I find 10, okay. And that was the end of it, and the Lord departed, and Abraham returned to where he was, to his place. So, Abraham still has a lot of faith in God. How many of us can imagine? Of course, I don't know that the Abraham knew he was talking to the Lord or an angel or what. It doesn't really say. We know it was the Lord because we have it written down. But whoever this was, Abraham knew that they were going to destroy all this. They were an angelic, they were a heavenly being of some kind because they had the power and they were going to destroy all these people for their wickedness. And how many of us would venture to speak up for such a wicked place? And yet but if we had loved ones there, it might make a difference. because we would assume or pray that our loved ones were the among whatever righteous he was going to find there. And so by this time, Abraham has grown, and his faith is strong at this point to have this great confidence. And so what does, well, I've already answered my question. What does this show about Abraham's faith? That it has grown and it's stronger than it was when he was lying about his wife.
He trusted God.
Yes, he trusted God to not do anything that would not be righteous. It kind of reminds me of Moses, when we get to Moses. And Moses, it's always pleading because of God. He didn't want God to look bad. And, but, you know, if Abraham would have thought, God knows how many righteous people are there. But he does this to show Abraham that I'm not just unwilling to spare if there are righteous people. As far as we know, how many righteous people were in Sodom?
One.
Lot, his wife and his two daughters escaped, but they did not show any faith in God. The wife looked back and she was turned into a pillar of salt. And the two daughters committed incest with their father because they thought, well, nobody's going to marry us and we won't have children. And I never have understood that. Who's going to marry their children? You know, that's not going to work out so well.
I think he saw God as a just God, and that gives us comfort. You know, mm-hmm. God's just, and he listens, mm-hmm. even though we're off. You know,
that's right.
He listens, and so he cared enough for him to listen.
He did. Frieda?
That kind of reminds me of today. That's how I think about today, the way the world has just turned to so much wickedness and everything. And maybe those that of us
Well,
that's
right. And he will only wait so long, but whether he comes or he takes them away. But that's the way I feel, too. I have family members. There are songs in some of the songs. I don't know if you were here for those that we sing. Lord, come quickly. And, you know, I don't want him to come quickly. I have loved ones that I want to have time. I'm ready when he's ready, and that's his choice. But and like for our nation, this teaches me for my nation, I pray for the righteous. God, remember the righteous. Spare the nation for those of us who are righteous. And if not, then your will be done. That's all we can say. But our nation's in a mess. And but yet, when we continue reading and we get to when the destruction of Jerusalem, there were righteous people who were taken into captivity along with the wicked. So just because there are righteous people in a nation doesn't mean that God's not eventually going to bring about his punishment on that nation. It reaches a point, I think it's in, is it Amos? Their cup of iniquity was full for three transgressions and for four. And God's cup of iniquity was full and he destroyed the nation. And so I don't know if we're at three or four or past. And so we don't know. But we can ask God, just like Abraham did, to remember the righteous when he is bringing about his judgments. Okay, is there any other question or comment on Abraham? If not, we're going to move into Jacob.
I had one.
Okay.
Back where it's telling why the two daughters did what they did, they said something about for the father's family.
Family through our father in 32.
Yeah. Well, in other words, to have his lineage go on. His father, their father's name would have died there. And so they had children to carry on his lineage. That was not a good excuse, but that was... Yeah, you know, when
we... I don't know if it was because they wanted children or...
I don't know. Something I can't really...
I struggle understanding some of the Eastern culture, especially at that time, especially where women were concerned and the family, all the way to Sarah. I mean, Sarah was grieving because she didn't have the children, she cried and everything. So it was something in the culture that made women want to have children that then excused their behavior. Sin for good.
From the very beginning, God made women to want children because He says your desire will be to, you'll have pain in childbirth, but your desire will be for your husband. So he intended for us. Maybe it's part of her punishment. Maybe not. I don't know. But the pain in childbearing was. But so I think most women, you run across very few women. There's a few, but very few, that will tell you from a young age, I don't want to have children. I have no desire to have children. And I've met a few who said they didn't want to have any kids, and then when they get married, they change their mind. Their motherly instincts kick in, I guess. Okay, let's look at Jacob. Let's turn to Genesis 25. Before we get started into looking at the passages, I didn't add this question. I thought about it later. Why was the birthright important? And we're going to talk about Jacob taking Esau's birthright, and because as the oldest, he received the birthright. Why was that important? What value was that? Turn to Deuteronomy 21. Susan Hendrick, would you read 15 through 17, please, of Deuteronomy 21?
If a man has two wives, the one loved and the other unloved, and both the loved and the unloved have borne him sons, if the firstborn son belongs to the unloved, then it shall be in the day he wills what he has to his sons, he cannot make the son of the loved the firstborn before the son of the unloved, who is the firstborn. But he shall acknowledge the firstborn, the son of the unloved, by giving him a double portion of all that he has, for he is the beginning of his strength. To him belongs the right of the firstborn.
So the firstborn got a double portion. He got twice as much as what anybody else got. Whatever there was to get, then he got twice as much as everybody else. And so that was an important thing. Possessions, land, whatever. And so in most cases, the birthright was treasured.
I still can't understand why they were allowed to have more than one wife.
Well,
that's beyond my understanding.
Well, it's one of those things God allowed. I don't think it was ever intended that way. And so that is why now that was one of those things that God allowed that he didn't approve of. And I don't understand that either. But he tolerated some things. I think it was all to bring about his purpose of bringing Christ. And so there were some things that, just like with the children of Israel, of course, he could have had Moses, and he could have brought a nation through Moses had he destroyed all the children of Israel. And he could have still kept his word. It would have just taken a lot longer because he would have had, it was like starting over. But God, some of the other things, just like having the one who sinned pray for the one who he sinned against. Some things in our mind just really don't, two and two don't make four.
I'm glad he's in charge.
I am too. Those are some of those things that I'm just so thankful that he's a loving God, and he does look at our weaknesses and love us anyway, just like with Abraham. He loved Abraham, and he brought his promises to fruition through Abraham, even though he sinned. So that gives me great hope. So anyway, the birthright was a very important thing to these, in this culture, anyway. We don't have such a thing today. That's not in our culture. But this was something that it wasn't just in their culture. It was something God told them they had to do. You got two sons, and this one is the oldest, but his mother's not your favorite. But this one over here is, kind of like Rachel and Leah. Leah certainly wasn't the favorite, but her sons were the ones who got the birthright, because Joseph was the one who saved the nation. So, anyway, let's look at why. How did Jacob get this from Esau? You would think this would be something that you would treasure so much that it would take something very critical to make you give it up. But in verse 25, let's read, we'll start back with Susan Hendricks. Susan, will you read verse 29 through 30? No, 29 through 33, sorry.
Okay, Genesis 25.
25, yes, ma'am.
And when Jacob had cooked stew, Esau came in from the field, and he was famished. And Esau said to Jacob, "Please let me have a swallow of that red stuff there, for I am famished." Therefore his name was called Edom. But Jacob said, "First, sell me your birthright." And Esau said, "Behold, I am about to die. So of what use then is the birthright to me?" And Jacob said, "First, swear to me." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob.
First of all, can anybody be so hungry that they can't wait till they fix something for themselves rather than give up something so precious? So evidently, Esau did not have much regard for his birthright. Let's look at Hebrews 12:16. Cheryl, would you read that, please? Read verse 15 and 16.
Me?
Cheryl, please. Sorry.
I can't hear you. 15 and 16?
Yes.
"See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness spring up causes trouble, and by it many be defiled, that there be no immoral or godless person like Esau, who sold his own birthright for a single meal."
So he was he's called godless or profane in the King James and New King James. Some synonyms for this word are heathen, wicked, worldly. But evidently, God knew what kind of child this baby was going to be before he was ever born. Frida, would you read chapter 25 of Genesis, and read verse 23.
"The Lord said to her, 'Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your body. And one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger.'"
So even before these two boys were born, God said, "The older will serve the younger." Well, how's that going to be? He's got the birthright. That would automatically give him position over the younger. But he's willing to give that up for a bowl of stew. That's how important it was to Esau. So we see that he had no regard for God or no regard for anything God had given him. God gave him this by his right of birth. God didn't force him to do this. This was something he did of his own accord. Of course, it doesn't say a whole lot for Jacob. Jacob is, he's a mess before he gets straightened up. But this was something that he wanted. And so he took it. And his brother would not have died had he not given him the stew. And it wouldn't have killed him to give him the stew without getting the birthright. But all of this works out to be what God wanted it to be. Sometimes we have plans and things just don't work out the way we planned on them working out because God intervenes. Okay, so we saw how he got the birthright. How did he get the blessing? Can someone briefly tell me in a few words what happened? That's right. That's a few words. That's right. But the whole thing that is so sad to me is his mother's part in this. Jacob, this was not Jacob's idea. Jacob, I feel like Jacob kind of went along very reluctantly because he's the one that's going in there, and if his father figures this out, he's the one that's going to bear the brunt of his father's anger and his wrath. And so, but he goes along with it. He's willing to go along with it. And I don't understand how they knew about the blessing that he would, that Jacob, I mean, that Isaac, thank you, here in the headlights, Isaac was about to pronounce the blessing on them. I don't know. Unless he had talked to Rebecca. You know, the God does not give us all the information and all the little side things like a Hollywood movie that builds up. We just have the main point that we need to know. We don't know all the peripheral stuff, and we don't need to know. And so he lost the birthright, and now he's lost the blessing. And how did he feel about losing the blessing? You know, he gave up his birthright right willingly. He didn't care about it. And basically, if he'd have had that, he wouldn't have had to worry about the blessing because he would have still ruled over his brother. But how did he feel about it?
He still thought he was the head of the blessing, even though his birthright.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, sometimes we don't think things through. If we mess up, sometimes we pay consequences. That is one thing that we will see when we get to David. But it's how we handle those consequences as to what God thinks of us and how God blesses us in the future.
But he also blamed other people. He held a grudge and he was not flocked to kill Jacob because it was all Jacob's fault.
That's right. And so that was my next question. How did it affect their relationship? Genesis 25:41. Amanda, would you read that? Chapter 25, verse 41. 25:41. That's not the right verse. Let me see. Maybe it's 27. Instead of
that one verse? 41?
Yeah.
Right. So Esau bore a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near, then I will kill my brother Jacob."
So that's how he felt. He was going to tolerate Jacob until his father died, and then that was going to be the end. He was going to kill him. It's interesting that he didn't seem to worry about how his mother felt. Of course, he was probably mad at his mother if he had any idea what she did. You're right. I should have read a little more carefully. Thank you. That's how they knew about the blessing. See? I should have read more carefully. Thank you very much, Melissa. Okay, we're going to stop here. We've been going right at 45 minutes. And so we will pick up with the effect that Rebecca's actions had on her and Jacob. It's sad what all of this cost. So sometimes when we start trying to fix something or make something happen the way we want it to in our family, let's remember Rebecca.